Te reo ererangi o te mānia. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
You're listening to the Physics Room Contemporary Art Korero, a monthly broadcast hosted by director James Tapsell Kururangi and myself, curator Jane Wallace. Welcome to this episode. It's the second installment of a mini-series called Artist Documents I'm hosting here over the next few months. Artist Documents is a conversation with an artist from the Physics Room's programming in which I ask for a list of things that have been points of reference for their practice recently. This can be broad. It might be a place, a song, a particular material, or a text. In this broadcast, I speak to Tamsin Hopkinson, who is currently exhibiting in the gallery with Abigail Aroha Jensen as part of our current show, Bootleg. Tamsin Hopkinson is an artist and curator currently based in Naarm. She is interested in systems of measurement, language, and the fraught application of these systems to ideas of sovereignty and agency. Tamsin completed a conjoined BFA and BA majoring in painting, art history and philosophy from University of Auckland's Elam School of Fine Arts in 2010. Recent exhibitions include The Wishing Well at Connors Connors, Signal Detection at Magia, and Octopus 23, The Field at Gertrude Contemporary. For some context before we begin, in our conversation, Tamsin speaks about a hole punch she used to use at the school her dad worked at. She brought a version of it to our conversation and proposed an activity where we used the hole punch to cut the silent letters out of the English version of the room sheet from the exhibition, so that through the hole left behind, you can read parts of the Te Reo Māori version. The room sheet can be downloaded at our website, physicsroom.org.nz, if you wanted to try this exercise for yourself. Tamsin's work in Bootleg is titled Crimson and Clover. It involves a large cast iron Albion press that had been disassembled into its component parts and several scrolls of newsprint with writing on them about the faulty translation of Te Tiriti or Waitangi and the entanglement of language, sale and theft. Two radios are positioned across from each other, tuned to a live AM frequency, filling the gallery with the sound of static.
So, my name is Tamsin Hopkinson. I went to Elam in 2010, which was 20 years ago, and I'm 38 now. And I went straight from home, straight from school to art school. And I hadn't really been to many galleries, and I didn't really know what art was. We were raised in the church, the Baptist church, and we had a very particular kind of upbringing that was like outside of kind of like popular culture. And I think it was because of where my parents were from. So like dad, he had like a very hard childhood. And then so did my mum. My mum kind of came from Wairoa, which I feel like would be like rural. And then dad came from like a massive, massive Catholic family. Dad was born in Wellington. Nana Erica, his mum, was really amazing. She was a lesbian, but like couldn't come out because of the church. She was like super smart, Nana Erica, but then she also put together our Pākehā family history, kind of through, like, without the internet, so, like, letters and, like, news articles, and she hand-wrote profiles of every single person in our family, so it was kind of crazy, because you kind of get to know her through reading it, and then I have been reading it heaps more now. Like, I knew it was important, so I always kept mine, and then I keep all our family's special things, and I take it really seriously. Actually, that's one of my things, like, that I put on my list, Nana Erica's book.
Cool.
Because I learned a lot, like, I learned about the press through that book.
And was it all handwritten as well, this book?
It was a typewriter.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's been, like, updated too, so, like, and, like, the fonts have changed. I didn't bring it with me, actually, but it included, like, songs and, like, profiles on women mainly,
mm-hmm.
because like obviously like women weren't recorded into history, and she had a real problem with that.
Yeah,
she was like a very progressive person, but then also she was a poet, beautiful writer, and then she used to write letters to Mum, and I have all the letters. Yeah, and she was very like, I feel like because of all her work she did, we have benefited from that so much. Yeah, like, and then also her experience of being married and having 10 kids with like quite an abusive husband, and then what she put together for us is like kind of amazing. But she was like very powerful woman, very smart, and had like a really hard life, like lots of Irish Catholic women did. We have no rights of your body, no reproductive rights, you obviously can't be gay, and yeah, it was, I guess, like no real like economical stability without having a husband. But then my grandfather came back from like my Irish grandfather, he had polio, and so he couldn't inscript into the war because he was disabled, and so he was very like mathematical, and like he finished school really young, he finished uni really young, but he also became an alcoholic and got really into gambling because it was like seen as shameful to not go to the war, and he was always really ashamed of like having a limp, and he was a terrible father to my dad, a terrible husband to my grandmother, and yeah, that's how we kind of remember him, and I think that I feel okay with that. Yeah, like because Nana, it kind of shows Nana Erica's resilience, and then also like she was thinking about us, like, and I feel like a big responsibility. Okay, like, you've told me, and I'm here I am, like, getting to know you better, thinking about your life, you know, and, like, the Catholic Church is very violent, and she just copped it, and, like, I think lots of Irish women did. Yeah. And, like, they grew up with, like, not very much money, and they had to go to church, but it was all in Latin. Yeah, and so, yeah, they had, like, a pretty hard upbringing, I think. But then it was very, like, my dad was kind of like the sun, you know? Like, he's, like, very funny, just sparkly eyes. And just, he just kind of, like, was, just loved life against all the odds. It's kind of crazy even talking about him. He, like, was a great father.
And what do you do now?
In my life?
Yeah.
For work? So I work in the arts.
Yeah.
I work as a teacher, so I work across all the art schools in Melbourne, so VCA, RMIT and Monash, mainly in the honours department, and I work sessionally, which I prefer. I also work as an art consultant informally, and I run fundraisers for other artists. And then I mainly also work as a curator. So I'm like an independent curator. I don't work for an institution, like, mainly, but I have before. And then with my art practice, it's always about our family and our whakapapa, and it's always for them. Yeah, so I treat it quite differently to everything else I do, but I kind of see it under the same umbrella.
Yeah, and education's real big in your family as well, eh?
It sure like is. Like, so all my Irish family are teachers.
Yeah.
Mum's a teacher. And Mum's like more like nurse, but everyone like teaching. So, you know, like in Māori culture, like teaching is seen as like a really important profession. And so that makes a lot of sense. So like it was really ingrained into us, like teaching is like the most ethical thing you can do. Mum and Dad didn't tell me what to do.
And especially, I don't know, from everything I've heard about your mum, it sounds like she's got like quite a like a point of view and like really committed to being a nurse and to being a teacher as well, so I feel like oftentimes that leads to pressure maybe to also follow in that, so for you to have had the space to go to art school instead seems amazing.
Yeah, it feels very privileged, and I feel a lot of guilt because I feel like my parents paid the price for our lives, which is quite common like in migrant communities, but also for Māori, I think. And then Mum, her upbringing was really interesting, and so she had a lot of brothers and sisters, and then Pop and Mum and my Māori grandparents were really good at gardening, really good at sewing, like they kind of had their own economy, you know, and respect was always like a big thing in their family. Pop was really strict, and Mama was like more like a social butterfly, really into fashion. Like the best dressed woman in town. She's like won a prize for it.
Did she sew as well?
Yeah. She sewed everyone's clothes. Like, so she used to go to the op shop, unravel a jumper, re-knit it for the kids. And then actually she made, okay, this is so cool. So she made jumpers for 10 kids. And mum's was highlighter orange, and then it had like, it was very 70s, like a V-neck, and then like brown roses around the waist. And amazing. Then I have it, and then I started wearing it, and they used to get teased at school.
That's cool.
She did it in highlighter colours, so like when they went out, she wouldn't lose it.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. Practical.
Yeah, very practical.
Shall we talk about the first object, item that's been kind of impactful for your work?
Sure. Yeah. So I thought we could talk about Crimson and Clover, the song.
Mm.
So when we were here, Woody and I, my partner... we've always been looking for the single of a song that Dad used to sing to us every night before bed, literally every night before bed, by Tommy James and the Shondells, and Woody found it immediately as soon as we arrived here. And then also I like handwriting, and whoever owned it before wrote it, like I like when people write on records. And then we kind of like, I haven't been able to play it, but I listened to it online, and then I just put it next to a photo of Dad, and like that entire song just reminds me of him, and he had really good music taste.
He's
really into music, but like just a specific type. And then he had records as well, and was also into comedy, so a lot of comedy records, and like he would sing in the kitchen when we were kids, like a very early riser, and then make like have this toast train where we'd like all line up because there's seven of us. And then he would, like, say what you wanted, and then he'll just make toast.
Amazing.
And sing and stuff in the kitchen.
What was it about Crimson and Clover that he liked as a song? Was it...
I don't know. Like, I think he loves, like, that era of music.
Mm.
It's, like, really beautifully recorded, so it sounds really warm.
Yeah.
And I think it was just this era, too, of, like, what he grew up... Like, what he listened to. I actually looked up the lyrics to be, like, what does this mean? Which is quite... I don't know if, like... musicians like I don't know if that's the point, and then I have like I guess my own interpretation of it, the song, but often like because Dad like he would sing the entire song every single night. It was just insane, but then we got really used to it, and then I every time I hear it I think of him.
What's your interpretation of it? Do you want to talk about that?
So like I think I named the work Crimson and Clover, and I think because there's often a misconception that like being Pākehā and being like I guess like the idea of being Pākehā and the idea of being Māori and like that being pretty fixed, and I think lots of Māori people think it perhaps if you had a Pākehā dad that wasn't a good experience, but our dad, it was like the best experience. And so it's kind of like about Dad loving us, but then also it's like in reference, like I thought about like crimson and clover, like blood and the land, and I feel like I'm really interested in words and like how they can be really violent, and how they can mobilize certain things, and in particular the theft of our land, and then also I liked how the press was found in a paddock, and then I was like, oh, that's kind of perfect, you know, like Crimson and Clover, and then over and over, which is like the ongoing process of colonization.
When I've been talking about the title in the show, I've been thinking a lot about Te Tiriti and the treaty, and thinking about this idea of like I don't hardly know her, but I think I could love her, but this kind of like imposition of yourself onto someone and people that you don't know and a place, and thinking about that, what it means to enter into a relationship when you're not prepared to get to know the person who you're meeting, and the kind of, that ongoingness of it as well. But I've also been really surprised by how few people have known the song. I thought it was kind of a... I thought it was a song everyone kind of knew or had encountered in some way. So it's interesting because it does... There's also this time gap in it too.
Definitely. That's such a cool reading of the lyric.
Do you want to talk about the next thing?
Sure. So Dad worked at a Māori boarding school called Hatopetera on the shore.
What was his role there?
He was a maths teacher. So actually nearly became a Catholic priest.
Yeah.
And he was part of the Marist Brothers. And in that, so that was like combined, like the Catholic Church was kind of combined with Hatopetera, which was an exclusively Māori school and exclusively only men, and then it changed to be women and men. And Dad loved teaching.
Yeah.
And, like, he was just loved there, you know. And he never used to wear shoes. So he started there and, like, he wouldn't wear shoes and he used to live there. So he was, like, sleeping there and, like, what's it called? Like, when you're, like, head of the boarding school, the sleeping area.
Oh, I want to say, like, matron, but that's not.
Yeah, like, I can't remember what it is, but he used to play them the radio and then he used to play them songs to sleep.
So cool.
Yeah, so cool. Great person. But then I, because me and Dad were so close and I just wanted to be him, we would roll around together. And then he used to work late. And he, I used to like, so he would sit where you're sitting, Jane. And then under the table I would sit and then collect all these, all the circles of a hole punch. So I bought the object, which is like a hole punch, which is like the similar one to what we had with Dad. And it's like super heavy. This is like made in Japan.
Yeah.
And
yeah, and all the little that all collect in here.
Yeah, yeah, and like I was obsessed with it, and so I used to collect it all and then put it back in there. But then also because of that, I was around Māori people. I heard Te Reo Māori, like, and I kind of saw how Dad was treated with like so much respect, and he was Pākehā, so it was like different to my mum, who was like, "You're going to be as smart as a white person," because that's how she was raised. And mum's like a full academic. But Dad, like, I just remember, this is like one of my like childhood memories. And then I brought this from home, and yeah, it's like special. And I thought, Jane, like, I love how we printed the room sheet in Te Reo Māori and English. But another thing that I wanted to talk about was how in the structure of the English language and silent letters. So English is like, they've colonized so many people and so many countries, including words. And so the silent letters in English, which there are a lot, point to the origins of different words of all the places they've colonized. And so it's a colonial structure in itself. And I think when we translate the Treaty of Waitangi, well, when we think about what it means to translate the Treaty of Waitangi in English into Te Reo Waitangi, it's like with the colonial framework that's already ingrained in the words. Because in Te Reo Māori, like, words have multiple meanings, and it's a very like beautiful, sophisticated language, but we also weren't allowed to learn it because in mum's generation you'll be hit at school for speaking Te Reo. And we didn't go to kōhanga. We didn't do kapa haka. And mum fully taught us how to, like, write essays. You know, like, we were, like, reading and writing and, like, two, apparently, that's what she says. But then we used to go to the library. We didn't, we weren't allowed to watch TV. And we had reading hour every day. We used to get up at 5:30 every day. And then we'd start, we would read the Bible, memorize the Bible, write it down. And then we had reading hour every night for 3 hours. And then that's kind of, we went to the library and then we would get out books, and then that's what we did. We all sat in like silence in the lounge and we would read. It was like implemented by mum.
This idea of silent reading as well is like, words as a silent thing rather than like, you've talked heaps about how Te Reo is like primarily an oral language as well. Like, I think that's a, not only silent letters, but this idea that words themselves should be like seen and not heard or something.
Well, like, I got really obsessed with like figuring out what is like, what's the silent letter in English, and like, where did it come from? And then it's like, once you ask the question to one word, it takes you on a full journey of like the history of colonization. And then I did an activity where with the Treaty of Waitangi, I decided to like see what it looked like without all the silent letters, you know? And then I thought, actually, so this is why, so I'm, what would be good is if we made a work together. And then we hole punch every single silent letter. So I've like, I've got on my phone, like, everything that's silent. And then I think it would be like a beautiful work to have like all the silent letters in the bottom. And then also the Te Reo Māori together, and then this will just be full of holes. And I think like I kind of love that. It's kind of like possibility or something, you know?
And I remember always being really mesmerized by the like the cutout that was left when you hole punched something as well, and you just, it's like this yeah, just like this thing that's been ripped out of another context, and I think it seems appropriate.
Yeah, and I kind of like the idea of like the hole punch, but also like, because Te Kore is like the void for Māori, and like I think the void in Te Ao Pākehā is seen as like a lack, a hole, or you're gonna fall in, or like. But for Te Ao Māori, it's seen as like possibility.
Yeah, like potentiality.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of love this idea of like making a hole. And also too, like, I love, because we obviously don't write heaps anymore. We use, we text or like we type. But then my memories of my dad and learning about Māori is like kind of manual. Yeah, and like, because who uses a hole punch anymore? Yeah, because I kind of love, like, obviously people listen can't see, but I mainly love the idea of being able to see the te reo through the English. It's a big problem. It's one of the biggest problems Aotearoa has, of this idea that you can translate Te Ao Māori into Te Ao Pākehā, because you can't. Yeah, and, like, we need better tools, and the best tools are our own language, which is, like, a recognised language, obviously. Like, so it's, like, Auslan, and te reo Māori, and then English,
yeah,
you know, which I love. But then my other thing I want to, like, another object I want to talk about is the passport.
Let's talk about the passport.
So, like, I used, so none of my family went away anywhere. Flying was like just
overseas,
like...
overseas, or just...
No, yeah, not overseas. Yeah. I mean, like, Dad's dream is to go overseas. And so we organised his passport, and he came to Melbourne. And it was just the best.
That's so cool.
Yeah, and my sister flew over with him. And Mum's been to America. But she's never been to Melbourne, hopefully soon. And then getting a passport was kind of like a big deal. And then also getting on a flight was a really big deal. And I was recently reading that they're going to take... So a few people said they're going to leave... Because at the moment, my passport is English at the top, and then it's translated into Te Reo Māori underneath, and it's in silver, and there's like a silver fern on the side. And it's like quite a beautiful passport. And then I thought... that the new passport was going to be... I thought it was going to be, like, flipped, like how it was now. Like, it would preference English, but apparently they're going to take off the Te Reo Māori. And then I was telling Mum about it, and, like, I love silver. I love the silver fern. I'm, like, I'm not, like, internationalism on any level, but I also think, like, well, this is our land, and, like, so why wouldn't we use our own language?
Yeah.
And then Mum was like, look, she was like, stop wasting your time. Just turn the passport the other way around and get on with your job. And then I was like, it's pretty good advice, because I do think that, like, this is, like, a distraction. And then people, like, I guess I kind of look into this as being violent, but I also think it distracts you from your work, and it distracts you from real work, and, like, also empowering yourself. And, like, and I loved that Mum just said, turn it around, because, like, in a way, it's like you're getting schooled, but also it's so true. Like, because I did feel angry. Like, I was like, oh, this is so, like, this idea that people will preference Te Ao Pākehā on our land internationally, but then also be like hashtag Aroha, like, and then also market our culture for tourism and like for politics.
Constantly. For political things.
And there's a misconception, I think, overseas, because I live in Melbourne, that. Aotearoa race relations are fabulous, and it's seen like that in Australia, but when I come back, I'm shocked at how bad things have been for Māori, and things that we need, like community nursing, health, like going to people's houses instead of them going to a hospital, which they feel unsafe in, and they probably are statistically, kohanga reo, like things that have taken a long time and a lot of sacrifice to build, and also with no money, and then just to completely wipe them out. Unbelievable.
And so many of the, like, first kohanga reo, they were all funded basically with no money and people, and then as soon as they got successful and as soon as the outcomes were seen as being really successful, then the government maybe funded them, and it's just like this winding back again of something that was really, they also didn't build in the first place. Like, I think that's a critical thing to remember, is that the majority of these initiatives were not started by the government either.
Yes, like, and like that, and also that kind of feeds into the role of a marae, like when Wairoa, where Mum grew up, had its floods.
Mm.
It was the marae that provided everyone shelter, and was the marae that like organized all the food, not the government. And I feel like, why do we pay tax then? You know, like, where is all the money going? Who is it for? And it's not for Māori, but it's our land. And so it, I think the way that our culture is structured is for a collective. And we, the most important thing is people. And I think for Pākehā, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's a massive clash, you know, mm-hmm. like, yeah. And I'm proud of Māori because we always step up. And, like, in our culture, we always look after people, especially kids. Yeah, but also our elders as well. And there's lots of respect. And if someone needs help, we would help them. Yeah, so I think, because even with kōhanga, like, obviously all the teachers were mainly volunteers. But the best thing about this whole thing is that now in Parliament we have like the kōhanga reo generation
mm.
stepping up. They can all speak to their Māori, all know what they're talking about. They're really tough. I love Tamitha Paul. Mm. Like, following her has been really amazing. I think because I can kind of relate to what she's saying, like, about mainly about like, so like housing mm. and also class and also incarceration, like mm. and just kind of telling it how it is, but then also looks great fashion, you know. I yeah. feel proud of her. I'm like, because also she was like the first person to go to uni in her family. Her parents sacrificed a lot for her, and she's doing a lot of work for us collectively, and I love to see it. Like, it's really inspiring. Yeah, so I was like, well, like, this is how you like, all the kids learning te reo at that time are now becoming adults.
Yeah.
And then I can kind of feel the difference. So I think that's, like, quite threatening. And I do think that's a lot of the reason why Pākehā feel threatened.
How many items is that?
We've talked about passport, crimson and clover. Okay.
Whole bunch of silent letters.
The last thing I want to talk about was the radio.
Yeah, let's talk about the radio, seeing yeah. as we're going to be on the radio. Yeah. I feel like it's appropriate.
Yeah, so, like, Dad was really into radio. So it's actually a radio technician, my dad. Mm. Like, and he would fix radios. And then he taught me how to use a crystal radio without any power. Okay, so then I was like, how is this working? Like, I don't understand. And then sound is vibrational energy that's around all the time. And it's hard for me to understand what's going on. So, like, when I've played music and, like, recorded music, I don't understand how it's engraving itself onto a record. Mm. I don't understand how it's going onto a tape. Literally, like, I've looked it up and tried to read about it, and I'm like, I don't know what's happening. But then I was like, well, the radio, like, there's sound, everything, there's lots of energy all around all the time, and the radio can pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
And it can pick it things up from far away. And I love AM radio because it's very sensitive compared to FM radio. And so there's like, and I also love, like, you could have your own radio show, like pirate radio. It's also free. It's also, like, how we learn a lot about music. Also other cultures, like, you know, different radio stations and different languages.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're really poor, you don't have access to culture, really. But the radio gives you access to everything. And so I had, like, and me and Dad love music. So, like, I just had a radio since I was a kid and I was obsessed with it. And I listened to, like, mainly, like, Gold 104. Is it? Maybe that's Australian. The Gold FM.
I guess it's different everywhere, right? Which I also really like about radio. Like, when I moved up to Wellington, I was like, what are the radio frequencies? And same when I moved down here as well, because I'd been so used to what they were like when I was a kid.
Yeah, I know. It's like, because we grew up listening to, like, my FM, and then when I come home, it's immediately what I do. I, like, put it on in the car and I'm like, I'm back, like, I love this. And then we would tape it, and then when I moved to Australia, I was, like, shocked that there was no hip-hop station. Nobody knows about hip-hop. And I was just like, what is going on? I mean, people do, but like, in it's terms not on of, like, the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, so we were really lucky to have that. But then also I heard, like, Tongan community stations and, like, different Pacific languages. And that was really cool. So I always found it really interesting to, like, flick around.
Yeah.
Anyway, now I'm kind of more interested in picking up signals from the outside of a gallery or an outside of some space and feeding them into the gallery. Particularly, I like, in the last show that I did, The Wishing Well, in Melbourne, we put the radio in the wall, And then we turned it on to like a live like AM frequency between frequencies, and then it picked up a truck. So it picks up people and like you can hear things. But I'm also terrified because I'm like, what if someone says something to me? I wouldn't like that. But then I like the possibility of maybe something happening. But then also it's kind of my way of, because people like to use in art this language of like site-specific relational aesthetics. And I kind of feel frustrated about that. I really believe in context and then art. Yeah, and that's all I care about really, like, and then people first and then objects. And with that comes a responsibility to host. And then for Māori, it's always about food. So if you don't have food in the gallery, why, like, I think that's really rude. Because often Māori will bring food too, and that's it's the same across a lot of cultures that aren't white. And then I think it's hard to convince the gallery to do that because they kind of want to keep it exclusive. But then I think they want us to come into the gallery, show our work, but then they won't follow our protocols. And so it puts us in such a weird, crazy position, to be honest. And so now when I do shows, I like order food myself. I pay for it myself. Some galleries have been really great, really generous. Some galleries refuse to serve food. And then also non-alcoholic beverages is like another thing that I feel like you have to provide. And I think hosting is the main, most important thing, like hospitality. Because it's really hard to walk into a gallery. It's intimidating. It's in a really unusual space. And food immediately crosses over that, like straight away. And then I couldn't care less about what's in the gallery. If you can get people in the gallery, then you have to, then that's when things get really lit. And so the radio is my way of like hosting lots of things. Yeah. And like, I guess feeling like it's not in my control anymore. And it's not like a single ownership of work.
Yeah. I like the idea that the radio, it's not generating something. It's just picking up things that are already there. Like, I think that's a really special thing about it.
Yeah. And also, like, kind of a connection back to, like, why our language was oral in the first place and what it means to be face-to-face with someone and, like, the tone of someone's voice, their face, their feeling, and how that... Because, you know, they say, like, 80% of our communication is subconscious. And I think it's so different when you're, like, in person with someone to when you're not.
Yeah.
And that's why our language is oral a lot of the time. And then also it's, things were protected through that. So you wouldn't be told things until you were ready. So it's a form of caring for your family, but also protecting stories and taonga. And then I think to have it written into the English language, predominantly for land sales, and the Bible has been very problematic, especially in terms of like our land and the Treaty of Waitangi and to your Waitangi. And so I think I'm really interested in like addressing the impossibility of translation, and also advocating for us to have our land back and give us our land back, give us our language back. And I think we all find our way. Lots of people don't, you know, but lots of people do. And yeah, I feel like Te Ao Māori is very sophisticated and Te Ao Pākehā not so much. And so it feels like something 3D has been flattened into something 2D. But then it has economic realities for our people where you are not at home on your own land.
That was me, Jane, speaking with Tamsin Hopkinson about her artist documents, some things that informed her thinking around the work in Bootleg. Bootleg involves work by Abigail Aroha Jensen and Tamsin and is on in the gallery until the 24th of August. Thank you for listening in to this episode of the Physics Room Contemporary Art Korero. We'll be back next on the 18th of September with another episode of Artist Documents. See you then.